I remember I would ask Marina, how many more do I need to do? How many more? And she was like, let's do one more and then we will revisit.
I kid you not, I walked back to camp bawling. I was just a wreck. I was like, not only am I starting to be tired, but I can't believe he's doing this. He's actually doing this.
That was Ihor Varys and Marina Stryker, and this is episode 161 of the Inspired Souls podcast.
Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life. We've got something really interesting for you today. Instead of our regular couple of the quarter episode, we are bringing to you a duo of the quarter. On Saturday, October 21st at 7 a.m. local time, the individual World Championships of Backyard Ultra Running commenced in Bell Buckle, Tennessee. The format sees racers run a 4.17 mile loop called a yard in backyard ultra running within a 1 hour time limit, after which all finishers within the allotted time are tied for first place and must present on the start line on the hour to go again. This continues until there is only one winner left standing who must complete a solo yard to be awarded with the win. After completing a whopping 107 yards, and hours, and covering 446 miles or 718 kilometers, Ukrainian-Canadian and past guest Ihor Varys was the last person to DNF, assisting Harvey Lewis to a world record win. Racers were allowed only one person to crew and support them for the duration of the race, and he entrusted 52-year-old friend and fellow ultra runner Marina Stryker with that task. To say she delivered is an understatement, and during this conversation, you will hear how instrumental Marina's experience and support was in Ihor's success. You will also be treated with a few stories of things Ihor does not remember during the 5 days of running, and you will get a glimpse into the militaristic discipline and mindset required by both crew and runner to keep moving for 107 hours straight. Dubbed the Dream Team on social media, these two athletes reveal what an unlimited mindset and unwavering belief can achieve. Let's jump right in. So, Ihor and Marina, welcome to the Inspired Souls podcast. We are so excited to have you on tonight.
Thank you so much, Kim and Carolyn. It's nice to be back. It feels like I was just here a couple days ago, but it's been 2 years. And it's nice to be back and back with a reinforcement, without who I would not have a story to tell today.
We have the Dream Team on today. So as you heard in the intro, we have both Marina Stryker and Ihor Varys with us tonight. And we're so excited to hear all that has happened at World Championship Backyard Ultra recently. However, like you said, Ihor, it seems like a minute since you've been on this podcast, but it's been 2 years. We had you on before you had even run your official first ultra marathon. You had recently just set the Mantario Double FKT, and I believe that still stands, as well as the one-way FKT. And since then, a whole lot has happened. So let's just go there for a moment. Like, what have you been up to in the last 2 years?
Yeah, lots changed. I ran my first ultra since we chatted last time. But in fact, I actually checked it and I ran, I think Biggs was my 11th ultra race. So I got 11 races within the last 2 years. I've moved and I've met so many friends. I've gone to so many beautiful places. I've seen so much of our beautiful country, and not only been outside, and the community of my friends expanded a lot. I've met amazing people like Marina, and I keep exploring. I guess I'm still learning, still a student of this game, but definitely a lot's changed since last time we chatted.
What was your first official ultra, by the way?
It was the Finlayson Arm 100K on the island. Yeah, and I think I did it a couple months after, or even 1 month after we chatted.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we touched points. I even said that I think I signed up for it at that point because it was the first ultra here. So the closest ultra too. Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, things were just opening up after COVID at that point too.
True.
we remember being, you know, those ultra moms giving you advice on the last podcast of don't burn brightly and burn up and just like do everything and then burn yourself out. And, you know, the next year, I don't know if you followed that advice or not, but, you know, in 2022, you started the year off with BC Backyard. Yeah, you were the last man standing there in April. I'll just do a quick recap here because I know you won't toot your own horn. In July, we actually met up at Sinister 7 and you managed to cross the finish line first at your first 100 miler there in the Crow's Nest Pass, July last year. I was fortunate enough to crew for you. We actually were also on the same course, but by far not at the same points at Fat Dog in August, where you got another first. Then Wham was in September. Like, this is every month. You're doing 100 mile races here last summer.
Yeah, I didn't listen to you, I guess.
Yeah, you didn't. You were not.
Sorry.
Student of the sport. But you managed to do quite well. And then a big break, about a 6-month break from what I can tell before Badger this spring. Is that correct?
Yeah. So last race was September. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the season was over, I guess, and there was no more races. Yeah. I mean, I tried to get into some winter races, but they're lotteries and I didn't get into them and I didn't get into them this time, so I will be busier in winter this time. But yeah, you're right, there was a break and then there was Badger. Yeah,
there was a whole lot of, I remember, like, why not? Oh, this is races going. Oh, Gary invited me to do WEM, why not? And I know your dream of running with Gary and on his courses.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's a whole lot of firsts. Like, I won't even list them all. Like, first, 1 second. Badger Mountain, you set the course record in March. Shuswap Ultra in June of this year earned yourself a first place finish in a trip to Patagonia this December. Canadian Death. So let's fast forward to this last August now. The race before Backyard was Canadian Death Race. So tell us about that one. Like, that one's a bit of an iconic race, and I know you met Harvey on the course at that race.
Yeah, it is. And I actually signed up for it without knowing that Harvey was on the list. And then I just heard from Shep and like, hey, dude, like, Harvey's there. It's going to be a showdown. I'm like, oh, really? Harvey's there? And yeah, it's an iconic race. And I remember back in Manitoba, everyone was talking about Canadian Death Race. This is the race every ultra runner should do. You know, there's a lot of talk and chat in the community there. So I always had it in the back of my head, and the schedule worked out so that, okay, it seems like we can do it this year. So we made a little trip out of it where we went like a road trip, drove there through Mount Robson Park, spent some time there, Jasper, and eventually went to Grand Cache. And yeah, it's living up to its name. The community is amazing. It always gets pretty much the same people, and it's gnarly. It's hard. It's beautiful, and yeah, the community was great. So I'm really happy I did that race. And yeah, that's where I met Harvey for the first time, I guess.
Yeah, to be continued.
To be continued. Yeah, we were like, okay, I guess I'm gonna see you at Biggs. He said, like, yeah, you're better at that for sure. So,
okay, well, we're going to get all into Biggs in just a second, but we have somebody else on the podcast too. So, Marina, I want to bring you into the conversation. We haven't interviewed you yet before, so maybe you could just give us a little bit of an intro. Who are you and where do you live and what do you do?
Sure. So my name is Marina Stryker. I live in Agassiz, which is half an hour from where Ihor lives here in Tulwak. I used to be a road runner until about six and a half years ago, where I switched to trail and learned shortly in that trail was a lot more fun, a lot more intense, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I joined the Abbotsford Trail Running Club, where I met a whole bunch more people that were like-minded like myself, and soon realized that this whole trail running thing is quite the jam. It's quite the sport, and I fit right in, and it was really fun. And I soon learned how to tackle the trails in a better way because I joined the running club and they were doing the same thing. So I ended up joining a few local races, and it kind of took off from there. It just became my new sport, and I was thrilled. And I really haven't done much road running since, unless I'm doing speed work, which isn't my favorite, but I know that speed work is where, you know, you do improve your running technique. It is transferable to trail, and it improves your racing time. So yeah, I'm a long distance trail runner now. I love long distance. I learned that anything around 100 miles or more is my jam. So in 2019, I tackled Fat Dog 120, and it was hard, but I realized that I can do hard things. And yeah, it's definitely my thing. I love it. Yeah.
Oh my God, all of you, I feel so left out. Like, you all run so far and I'm like, oh, a marathon's so long. And anyway, I was just about to say, you wouldn't be the first person that the road running community has lost over to trails when they finally discover the trails. It's like, bye, I'm not coming back anymore.
At least you still acknowledge speed work is somewhat important. You and Ihor probably have that in common. It's not your favorite thing to do. But that would be my next question is, how in the world did you guys meet and become friends?
Yeah, so that actually, it's a good, great question. And so my friend who was living locally here up on Promontory, Mitch, he and I were out for a run about just under 3 years ago now. We were doing some speed work and whatnot. And we came across this ad in the local paper where a local fella was doing stair repeats. And I thought, like, who's doing stair repeats for the food bank? Like, this is wild. Like 24 hours of stair repeats. We got to check out who this guy is. Do you want to go for a run Saturday morning? Let's go check out who this guy is. So we went running past the stairs up here on Promontory, and his name was Ihor, and we introduced ourselves, and soon we invited him to some local trail runs that we were doing, and he seemed to fit right in, and we kind of hit it off, and it just kind of broadened his world of trail running, because he was somewhat new to the area, and it was a great way to introduce him to other like-minded souls. It was fun.
Yeah, Marina was my first trail buddy. So when we met, I'm just some kid from with a weird name from heck knows where. And I've been here for a few months now, but Marina invited me for the first run, and she showed me some our backyard trails here and there. And I remember it was before Christmas,
yeah,
or Christmas even.
Yeah.
And yeah, I went for a run, and she told me about all her incredible achievements. And I was just like so inspired. I'm like, oh my gosh, this woman is just incredible. She's like doing all these 100 milers, and like, I want to hang out with her. Like, there's so much to learn from her. If we've been running together, yeah, I guess for 2+ years,
yeah,
now, on and off, you know, because we're still doing our own things and different schedules, but on the weekend sometimes we get together, and Marina is still showing us some incredible hikes in the backyard, some secret gems, because she's been here for a while, so she knows things better and what maps might not have or apps might not have. She knows it, and she's still rediscovering our backyard for us. And honestly, we go anywhere we go, everyone knows Marina. She's like the local legend. Like, everyone knows her. Like, literally everyone. Oh, you're Marina. Oh, you're Marina. Yeah, it's like, she, no matter where we go, she's like this hiking and running guru here. And yeah, having her as a friend, it's a blessing for sure.
Yeah, what better friends to make when you first move into town than someone like that? Well, that's great. And you know, fast forwarding now to what we want to spend some time talking about tonight, which is the most recent World Championships Backyard Ultra event. You guys went, as everybody's calling it, the dream team. But for those of our listeners that have no idea what I've just said, like, what is a backyard ultra? Ihor, could you kind of give us a quick definition or synopsis of what in the world this thing is and how it all got started?
Yeah, for sure. Backyard ultra is a unique format masterminded by Gary Cantrell, also known as Laz Lake, the same creator of the Barkley Marathons. So the same crazy person who created Barkley Marathons in 2011, he came up with this idea where people would do one loop, which is 6.7K or 4.16 miles every hour on the top of the hour, until there's only one man standing. So the idea of this distance is that every 24 hours you run 100 miles, which is an incredible accomplishment to complete 100 miles within 24 hours. You know, many people, it's hard. And so every hour you do that distance, you can do it as fast or as slow as you want. And if you have some time left after that, you completed the 6.7K loop, you can do whatever you want. Lars even says you can get married within that time frame if you want. But yeah, you're free to rest, to eat, to hydrate, to sleep, to go to the washroom, do whatever you want. But you have to start on the top of the next hour. When the bell rings, you have to start. If you cannot complete the loop within an hour, you're out. If you cannot start on the top of the loop, you're out. And it doesn't seem like a long distance, 6.7K, right? It's pretty simple and it's easy until it's not. Eventually, it's a huge challenge to cover that distance within an hour. And many people time out. Many people cannot start. Many people come back as they start as what I did, I guess, as Biggs.
After 107 hours plus of moving, whether we call it running, walking, whatever it is. So you're doing this looped course. And I think one of the interesting aspects of this format is that your crew gets to see you every hour on the hour and pretty much doesn't get any rest similar to you if they're going to be there. So Marina, it's just fascinating to me. As far as I'm aware, you were Ihor's sole crew member out there during this event. And were there any laps that you missed him? Like that you took a snooze and missed him? Or were you there for him every 53 minutes or whatever it was?
You have to ask. There was 1 hour in the middle. It was 3 a.m. on night 4. And he comes running in and he's like, Marina, I'm here. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting up. I was in my chair, in the zero gravity chair with a blanket over my head, trying to sleep. And I totally didn't hear my alarm go off. I was out like a light. And there was a 1 hour I did not wake up. And so luckily.
Oh, I'm sorry to call you out on like. Was,
Marina, get off my chair. Like my time to sleep, wake up. But no, she was amazing. There was just that 1 hour, but I actually didn't need anything. I just needed to sleep because it was 3 a.m. in the morning. So she didn't need to cook anything for me or anything. It was the only hour. But all other hours, it would be like a Formula One pit stop. I will come. Everything is ready for me. Food is ready. If it's night, bed is ready for me. I sleep. She already has snacks for me to go. Yeah, I did not need to do anything. I just had to put one foot in front of another. Like my job was really easy. She had to think, cook, prepare shoes, like thinking about who to reach out to motivate me, to call my friends, update my friends. Like her job is hard. Yeah, I did crewing for 28 hours for one of my friends at BC Backyard this year. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. It's horrible. It's easier to run than to crew. Like we did.
You make a point of people needing to be updated. Like I got some screenshots friends were sharing of what Marina's updates. And I'm like, that woman doesn't even have a chance to go to the bathroom. Like she's just constantly on the go. It's amazing.
But that's what I was going to ask. So I would imagine as a non-trail runner who would never in a million years do anything like this, I would imagine that Ihor, you come in sometimes and don't even know what you want. Like Marina, how do you anticipate what he might want? Will he want to sleep? Will he want soup? Will he want to call his mom? Like, how do you know what to have ready? Or do you just have to get everything ready just in case?
Well, it kind of goes back to when my friend Nick and I crewed him at the Canadian Championships last year, October in Summerland. We learned really quickly how his diet is mostly keto. And so when we went shopping for the items, he already had the items picked out and we kind of went from there and it was teamwork back then. But for this race, it was only one crew member allowed. And so it was like, oh my, okay, this is epic. I get to go to this, but it's going to be a lot of work.
Okay. So you just said only one crew member was allowed. I wasn't aware of that. I thought that was kind of your choice. So every runner only had one crew member allowed. That adds a whole other component. You really need to be a team. You can't go to that race with a crew member that's going to fail you and decide they need a 12-hour nap in the middle of your race. So you mentioned nutrition. You knew what you wanted to eat. Did your nutrition plan go as planned? Did you find that, you know, your stomach handled what you'd planned or did things have to change on the run?
I did not have to change. It went perfectly amazing. I would say I had zero issues. with my stomach. I usually don't have any issues, but here I would eat a lot. I would, like, we would always have same breakfast. We would have lunch, we would have supper, and say every 8 to 10 hours we would have a protein shake and some snacks here and there. And at night, I would try to sleep when I'm in the camp and then just eat on the go. As I was running, Marina would put something in a little pouch for me. It was always a surprise for me. I was always kind of another thing to look forward to in the middle of the night. So she would put something in my bag. And then when I go to that section, there's always one section where I eat because I'm walking that section. And I would pull out and like, oh, Marina put some crepes and cheese this time. Or there's some cut sausages, or there's some wrap, or some peanut butter and banana. So she would always surprise me with that. And that was kind of also highlight every hour, something to look forward to.
Mm. Okay, so you always did the eating on the run or the walking sections of the run. Oh. So how long were the laps taking you? And how long would you have in the camp with Marina before heading out? Or did it vary depending on your level of fatigue?
Yeah, I would eat on the go only on night loops just because we were trying to bank all the camp time for sleeping so we could get all possible minutes to sleep. So those night loops would be like 49-50 minutes. So it's pretty fast for me because my day loops would be like 53 minutes, sometimes 54 minutes. So nights were faster. That's including eating time even on the go because I would half walk, half run those night loops. But because it was the road, so it's pretty easy. It wasn't a lot of vert. So I was able to cover them within 49-50 minutes so that when I come home or to the camp, I just go straight to bed and sleep for 8-9 minutes. And Marina literally would wake me up with the last whistle. So 1 minute left, she would wake me up, kick me out, put some food in my vest and replace my water. And I was good for another hour. And
so you were able to sleep in 8 to 9 minutes. You were actually able to sleep.
I slept a lot, actually. Yeah, wow. I did some math, but I did sleep around 3 hours, just under 3 hours for the whole thing. Like, mm-hmm. I know it sounds not much, but it helps.
It's fascinating to me in such short bursts. You know, like there's so much about sleep science and REM and all this stuff, but some people can hit it instantly, as, you know, any mom who's ever had an infant that needs to sleep in 2 seconds, you can do it. And obviously people in backyard ultras can do it. Marina, what were the challenges that you encountered supporting him in getting those 8 to 9 minutes of sleep? Was it easy? Did he just lay down and you had to do nothing? Or were there certain things you had to do to ensure the environment was good and he was warm, et cetera?
So I had to be pretty organized because I knew he wanted to sleep coming into camp, into the tent as soon as he rolled in. So as soon as he rolled in, I would have everything laid out prior to. So my goal was that as he left at the top of the hour, I would whip into the tent, literally lay out the things I knew he would consume right away. But if it had to get heated, I would have it ready to be heated. So I would be sleeping in the chair by about 03 or 04 of the hour. And I would set my phone alarm until the 35-minute mark, literally. And I would get a solid 32, 33 minutes of sleep, wake up at the alarm and fire up the soup or fire up the hot chocolate or whatever it was that I knew he would consume 3 sips of, even though it was very little. But he would consume that little bit and then lay down immediately. And I would wake him up at that last whistle blowing. And him knowing that I was going to wake him up allowed him to sleep and relax. He didn't have to worry about listening to that whistle.
Yeah,
he had to trust me for that. So that was a big responsibility for me, but that was part of my job. And it worked really well. And so my main concern was whether or not he was going to actually consume any food at all as he would roll in, because I knew he needed food, like he needed to eat. He was burning a lot of calories. And there was times where he was adamant where, no, I'm not going to eat or drink that right now. I'm just going to lay down. I'll eat it on the go. I'm like, okay. So as he slept for those 8 to 9 minutes, I would literally slide his refilled flask into his pouch quietly and carefully, and put the Ziploc baggie of snacks on the other side and cover him up real quickly. And he would sleep. He did really well with that. It was a really good cycle we had going. And he would do that from 8 p.m. approximately until 6 in the morning. And him doing that, he got a fair amount of sleep, like more than I anticipated he would. And I myself got a good amount of sleep as well. So when it was 7 a.m. rolled around, it was time for shoe change and breakfast. It was a good reset with that sunlight coming in. It was a beautiful, beautiful race weather. It was amazing.
Oh, did you ever have great weather? Like from what I could tell remotely, it seemed like it could have been a heck of a lot worse for sure. So I'm hearing this was down to a science, like to the minute. Minute 3, minute 4, I was sleeping. Minute 35, I was up. Minute 53, he comes, or 49, he comes in. And minute 59, the whistle blows and he's on the start line. And that is a, like, that's NASCAR worthy coordination there.
I have a question about when you get woken up at whatever, minute 58. Like, are you, I'm just trying to imagine. Do you feel like you've been sleeping forever? Are you like, don't wake me up? Like, what is your mood when you get woken up after 8 minutes?
Okay, let's ask this of Ihor and then let's ask this of Marina.
Yeah, so it's always minute 59. So yeah, I slept very good because every hour I would dream for those 8-9 minutes. I was dreaming. I remember my dreams. I do not remember whistles. I do not remember hearing anything outside. So I was sleeping. I was dead every hour. Yeah, because I feel like you're so tired. Well, maybe first night wasn't as good, but starting from second night on, you're just getting so tired that you're turning off. Your brain turns off right away whenever it gets comfortable. But yeah, so Marina, she would cover me with a blanket. And that minute 59, it's still the worst feeling in the world. And I kind of hated Marina that minute because she would strip me off that blanket. And that cold would just hit my body. And I still sometimes wake up with that feeling of I'm shivering because it's so cold. She's putting the jacket on me like, you're good. Good. Let's go. And when she would kick me out of the tent. And there's still a little bit of walking to do to the corral from where our tent was initially. And sometimes I would get into that corral like 5 seconds before the go time. I would like, oh, I'm like barely walking, muscles got seized up, but you know, you start kind of moving. And I hated Marina that particular minute. But then I loved her for doing it for me, you know. It's so I got going once my muscles warmed up, and I actually pulled out the food when the walking section where I pulled out food, like, oh, Marina gave me this, she's incredible. You know? So I stopped hating her at that point, and then I come back to the camp and we repeat and repeat and repeat. Yeah, and it's that's my side.
Hey, Marina, let's hear it from your perspective. So
I have actually never really seen Ihor cranky, mind you. I don't know you that well. Tell us, like, did he ever get kind of cranky with you?
Well, you know, it was all business doing this, and that. And then when it was time to cover him with a blanket, I would put the blanket right up to his neck. And there was so much love doing that. I would put it around his neck, nice and tucked in, kind of. And then he would sleep. But as soon as that last whistle blew, I knew it was like 45 seconds to get him from the bed literally to the corral, just because I was maximizing the time so much, right down to the seconds, right? And pulling that blanket off, I literally winced doing it, but I knew I had to do it gently. I was being gentle. It was that moment of pain where it's like, oh, poor guy, he's got to go out again.
Oh my gosh. Now, was it just the night loops that you were sleeping, or did you sleep in the day loops as well?
In the day loops, it was more about, so 7 o'clock, it would be time to do the shoe change, quick foot care. At the 8 o'clock hour, we would do an outfit change because the day was also getting a little bit warmer again. And then it was a good sized breakfast. And if he didn't finish that breakfast, it would be finished the next hour after that because it was so good with the coffee and such. But in the daytime, there wasn't much sleeping going on. It was more maximizing those 7-8 minutes in camp to get the food in, drinking more. He was drinking a lot more, doing the ice thing, like the ice around the neck. Ice in the hat.
It hot in the day?
Yeah, it was like 26-27 degrees.
Oh, yeah, wow. And the day loop took more time than the night loop, just because of the trail, more elevation. So I was going slower.
Hot.
Yeah, and we had less time for camp, for rest, right? So, and I was just eating a lot during the day because I was eating way less at night, just trying to make my body sleep so that it doesn't, I'm not overloaded with food, because, you know, you overload yourself with food, you can't really sleep. And I wanted to sleep, you know, even those 8-9 minutes an hour. And daytime is when we had a feast. I would eat every hour in the camp, and I would not eat on the trail, like almost never, just because it's technical. My eyes were always on the trail because I didn't want to fall. I didn't want to break anything, because so many people fell. Like, it's very easy to fall. It's a very technical trail. So I was focused on running day loop and eating in the camp.
Okay. So you, the change in the trail overnight to a road was just for safety reasons, or why did the loop change at night?
Yeah. So safety reason. I think Lana's mentioned it somewhere, used to be where you would run on the trail 24 hours. But yeah, safety is the biggest one. It's just so dark on the trail, and it's just so technical, and people get sleep deprived, and it's really easy to fall at night on the trail. So that's why he moved it to the road, and it's a little bit easier technically, right? So people can go further. And it's something to look forward to. When you're running trail, you get, you kind of get tired of it at certain points. So you're looking forward to those easier road loops. And vice versa, you're running road, and like, that's what I was looking forward to the trail entire night. And I was like cursing Lass that it's 11 day loop and 13 night loops. Why not 12 and 12? Let's make it even.
Yeah.
12 trails and 12. But I think it's because of the daylight, because the day is so short. So we had 11 loops on the trail.
So which one did you like better?
Of course, trail. I could not stand the road. Come on, Carolyn. That's the wrong question.
I know, but it takes longer, right? Like, there's a trade-off. Is that the road one takes you less time, so you can sleep more?
You know, I would sacrifice those 3-4 minutes of sleep if I could do it on the trail all the time. It's just so way nicer on your legs, even though it is technical, but it is dirt. It's not asphalt. Like, you feel the difference when you're hitting that asphalt nonstop. And yeah. I don't know, I never run on asphalt. I train on trails. Trails is my passion. It's my element. So when I'm on trails, I feel it's like in my element. And the second you put me on the road, I feel useless.
Boring. No. I'm sorry, Carolyn. it is a different feeling on your joints, for sure. Okay, so let's talk strategy for a minute here. You guys, like Ihor has done a few backyard ultras before. You had to qualify in a few different events to get to where you were. Marina, you mentioned that you crewed him at his last one at Canadian Championships. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Have you done any backyard ultras yourself?
I did last year in April and this year in April at the BC Backyard, both years. And I didn't do too great. The first year I did all right. I did about 27 loops. And my goal was to go a little higher this April. But unfortunately, my crew gal, she got sick, and I had to find alternate crew. And it went okay. But I felt I wasn't as dialed in as I would have been. And my husband and my daughter ended up crewing me through the night. And I just spiraled, and it was like, this is not my thing. I'm not doing this ever again.
Okay, but you've done greater than 24 hours, like 27 loops. It's no joke. So combined between the both of you, you've got a lot of experience and a few races under your belt. So I'm interested to hear, between the two of you, what things did you learn? What things did you learn worked and didn't work that you brought together as both crew and racer into this event? So maybe, Marina, you go first.
So I feel that because I've done the format twice now, the importance of having good crew is the key to get you through, to go long and far. It's absolutely the number one thing. And so because I've been on that end of things, I had a good feeling for what it would take to crew Ihor at Biggs, especially because I crewed him in Summerland as well with my friend Nick Jarvis. And that went really, really well. It was excellent teamwork and it went really well. But at the end of the day, having good crew is what it takes. But at the same time, I just feel that it just comes naturally to crew well. Like, it's just, maybe it's the mother in me. I've had 4 kids. it just comes naturally. I don't know. It was fun. It was good to speak.
Well, and as an endurance athlete yourself, you get it. Like, in order to crew endurance athletes, you have to understand in some aspect what it feels like, especially if you're trying to read all those, the things they aren't saying, the things they are saying, you know, you take, I've said it before, you take that energy they bring in and you either need to throw it back out in a positive way, or you need to absorb the negative and flip it instantly into the positive. It takes a lot to read that in a few seconds, right? Of what do I need to do? And so it sounds to me like Ihor chose just the best crew chief possible to take him there. So, oh, go ahead.
I just had an observation from the outside, and you can tell me, Marina, what you think about this. You mentioned you had a person lined up, and then for whatever reason, she couldn't do it. And then it was your husband and daughter. Is there advantages or disadvantages to having somebody so close to you be your crew? And is there, you know, in this case, Ihor, is there an advantage to having somebody that's not your family be your crew?
So I guess that when it's your very own family, it's easier to succumb to the weaknesses that they show, whereas really they should be showing strength and such. So my husband is excellent at crewing. He's crewed me before. But at the same time, you need to be very, very dialed in. And if you're not dialed into that individual who you're crewing, you spiral very quickly. Mm-hmm. My daughter was able to keep me up and keep me going and say, Dad, she needs this. Dad, she needs that. Her soup needs to get warmed up. You know, let's get this done. But at the same time, I think having a good friend crewing someone like Ihor, like me crewing him, I was able to be dialed in and know what he needed and be on my game and keep it interesting, keep it fun. It's also all about approach. When the individual starts showing weakness and starting complaining, you need to go, no, wait, like you can do this. Like, no, you got to push and be encouraging.
Yeah, I think if I were Marina's son, she wouldn't be so fast with ripping off that blanket every 15 minutes. I'm just kidding.
No, I think you're absolutely right, though, Ihor. Like, there's something to
you. Let you get up here and go back running in the loop. No, I have to admit that Marina, like this format overall, the way that Lass created it, is that your crew needs to be an endurance athlete to an extent. And I have to say that Marina, she's not only an incredible endurance athlete, she's really passionate about it. Like, she really loves to be in the community. Even if she's not running, she would love to be a crew. She would love to be a volunteer. She would love to be a race director. Like, she's like so passionate about all things ultra, not only backyard, that I knew that she's like amazing candidate, and her and Nick Jarvis did fantastic job at the satellite championship Canadian. So they did amazing. Like I was so impressed by both of them, how they went above and beyond for me, that I knew that Marina would excel at Biggs for sure. And the rest is history. Like, we at satellite championships, though, we didn't go, I guess, as far. We didn't go to an extent where I would get completely delirious. So here at Biggs, we did. And that's where Marina showed her another side, where while she can be passionate, while she can be nice and motherly, like, she can also freaking kick me out and make me run another loop when I feel like my foot is broken. And
he shoots her a glare. Okay, so
security crew member, you know, where that's where she showed, like, I did definitely at least 10 extra loops just because of Marina. I would have given out way earlier because I was so out of it. And Marina said, no, you're not giving up. Like, here, let's go. One more loop.
I'm not done. You're not done. On that note, like, how do I even say this? You mentioned Marina. When you see weakness, you have to know how to buoy that person up, right? When did it start to get hard? When did you see it starting to get hard, Marina, in Ihor? And then I'd like to know when he felt it actually start to get hard.
It was day 5 at 4 a.m. where...
Oh, goodness.
Yeah,
you know exactly.
It was 4 a.m. and he came in. It was dark. It was, it was nighttime. And he's like, Marina, where am I running? Like, where do I go next? I'm like, you know what? We're going to sleep first. And then when you get up, I'll show you. So it was time to get up and the blanket came off. And he's like, but where do I go? And I'm like, Oh my. Okay. It's the first time I'm seeing this out of him now. Like, this shit's getting real.
And so how many hours in is this? Day five. That's like 96 plus, right?
4 in the morning. So it was
93 hours. Yeah.
93 hours. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the first time I seen a little bit of deliriousness going on. I'm like, oh boy. Okay. Things are changing up and I need to change. Like, I need to redirect my sales. And yeah, it got interesting. So he went out loop after loop some more. As the sun came out, it was a new day. And at 7 in the morning, when he did his first trail loop on day 5, he took off and he went through the corral. The bell went off. They went. And I kid you not, I walked back to camp bawling. I was just a wreck. I was like, not only am I starting to be tired, but I can't believe he's doing this. He's actually doing this. I'm tired, but I'm so fucking proud of him. And so then it was 8 o'clock, and then it was 9 o'clock. And then around 10, 11 that morning, he's like, Marina, my foot is so sore. I can't. I'm like, but is your foot really sore or is it your mind? And he's like, I actually don't know. Like, are we still doing trail or are we going back to road? Where do I go? And I'm like, oh boy, this is just becoming an hourly thing now. And I knew he was starting to like really need sleep. And it was hard to get him to sleep because there's so much going on in the daytime. The feeding, the drinking, the resting in the chair. He was still able to close his eyes for a few moments. And then I realized I need to reach out to some friends locally and go, hey, I need you guys to give him a pep talk. Can I call you in at the top of the hour, like 3 minutes before? And that went really well. We did that about 5 times that morning. And I'm like, okay, that's enough. No more of that. He's doing good. Let's just keep him going now. And that was a really amazing thing my friends here in Chilliwack did. And I'm really happy that they did that because it actually refocused his mind. Instead of him deliberating with me every hour coming in, he actually had a positive outset to go back out. And he actually did it. He'd go out hour after hour. I'm like, wow, he's doing this. Yes. So proud of him. And that's how he rallied. He rallied and he did really well. It was amazing.
Now, Ihor, I'm curious to hear from you. Was it 4 a.m. on the fifth day for you as well that you felt like you started to struggle, or was it a different time?
Was it 48 hours before that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously, physically, you get tired. I mean, whatever, pretty soon, 50 miles in, you start feeling it, right? But physical pain is not an issue. You kind of keep pushing it. But yeah, I actually clearly remember that moment when I asked Marino, like, where are we running and why are we running? Like, where do I go? And then I remember I came back after the loop and I asked Marina, have we been doing all this time for like 90 plus hours? And Marina's like, yeah, you've been doing loops for 93 hours. Like, I'm like, are you sure? Or did we just start? Like, I was like so out of it. Like, I needed sleep. I was very delirious. I couldn't understand. Like, I was still putting one foot in front of another. And at some point, even on the road, it was still the last couple hours on the road. I remember running with those guys, but I don't remember why I'm running. So I made myself a note in my head, like, okay, I'm going to follow this first guy. I don't remember who it was, to be honest. But in my head, like, I think this first guy knows what he's doing. So I'm just going to do exactly what I was hoping so. And I actually do not remember, like, at the turnaround, many hours, like, where we turn around. And I remember I came back and I asked Marina, did it clock in? Like, is everything okay? Because there's a chip that reads a chip. So I was like, did I go to the turnaround point or did it count? I was like, yeah, you did another loop. You did great. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, it's surreal. I've never been in that headspace before, right? So it was very new to me to be there and new to Marina to crew me in those waters too when I was a little bit off, you know.
A little bit. You know, one couldn't blame you after that many hours. I'm honestly just shocked and on, you know, in awe that it took you 5 full days to start to become delirious, because for me it's usually around the 30-hour mark and I'm gone. So I'm curious, like, both before you started to lose orientation to space and time, as well as after, what kind of interactions were happening on the course there? Like, how much did you interact with other runners?
Actually, a lot. You know, I deep into those hours, I eventually was able to catch up with the guys that were running out front fast all the time. because they slowed down a lot because they eventually got tired. So they couldn't really keep up the same pace they used to. So I got to meet those faster guys. Like I got to chat with, say, Phil Gore and Sam Harvey, those guys that did hundreds already that had on their resumes. But it was really blurry. I remember Bartosz, the Polish guy, he would always speak Polish to me. He speaks English, very good English, but he was also so tired that he could not really speak English. So he would speak Polish. And I told him multiple times that I do not understand what you are saying. And at the end, I was like, you know, Bartosz, keep speaking Polish. Just want to let you know that I do not understand what you are saying. But if you feel comfortable speaking to me in Polish, do so.
At least you won't feel crazy talking to yourself. You're talking to me.
Yeah, and you know what? And I was also probably chatting some gibberish stuff on and off, that blabbing. And, you know, we were all pretty out of it.
Did you start speaking Ukrainian at any point?
Yes. I don't know. I remember. Maybe I did, you know. But I clearly remember. So when I ran hour 103, which was the new world record, and I finished that loop first. So as we were lining up for hour 104, Phil Gore's wife came up to me to the start line, and Phil was already done after 100 hours. And she goes, "Hey, Ihor, I'm Phil Gore's wife. Congratulations on the world record." And I'm like, "What world?" Like, I was so out there. I did not understand that we even ran the world record. I didn't know how many hours we ran. And she goes, "You beat Phil's world record. You just got the new world record." I'm like, "Really?" like I was so like, "Yeah, congrats." And she's like, "Okay, so you look like you need some sleep, but bye." And like, it didn't click in how far we went. Like, I had no idea that we were running 103rd, 104th hour at that point.
So you weren't really keeping track of the loops necessarily, but did you know what the world record was going into this at all?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. And Phil Gore was running there, and we got to chat with him for an hour or so, and we made sense. I could understand what he was saying. I think he understood what I was saying, even though we were both completely like out of it.
Oh my god, just the way you said that, we actually made sense.
It was pretty incredible. Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting, the kind of interactions and the camaraderie even out on the course. But I'm curious, from your standpoint, Marina, what the vibe was like back at the camp. Like, were you kind of interacting with other athletes' crews, or what was going on there?
Were you sleeping as much as you could?
Yeah.
So day one, day two, I was very focused on what he needed to every hour on the hours. I was very dialed in with what he needed. And at some point, I actually felt like I was being a little bit antisocial to the other crew members. Mm-hmm. But in my head, I was like, no, you got a job to do. You need to stay focused. And there was a lot of visiting going on around camp. And it was really nice to walk by and chit chat for momentarily and then get back to camp and finish what you were working on. And so the days kind of went by. And on day four and a half, day five, actually, that's when other crews, even on day four, other crew members were watching very closely how I was doing things and how I was going about my business. And they just kept dropping by the tent saying, "Whatever you're doing, keep doing. Ihor is our champion. We're all vouching for Ihor. He's doing amazing." I said, "Well, thank you." And they were like, You're doing great. You're amazing." I'm like, "Okay, this is great, but I got work to do." Like, I was just very focused. It was like all work. And on day five, it was incredible. Even day four, where other crew members would pop by and say, "Marina, do you need anything for Ihor?" I'm like, "I actually need more mayonnaise and tortilla wraps." I said, "Are you going into town?" Yeah. "We can go to town. Anything else?" I said, "Well, a big bag of ice would be really nice, because we were going through a lot of ice. And I didn't want to run out. I was scared of running out of ice, because that's one of our lifelines too. And so to keep them cool." And they would come back with these items, and other people with other items I would ask. And I'd offer them a Canadian $20 bill, not thinking, because I didn't have any of the cash on me. And they're like, no, it's for Ihor. Keep it. It's okay." I'm like, oh my gosh. My heart, like, this happened several times, and I was just so overwhelmed by everyone's kindness. And as racers were DNFing, of course, two crew members couldn't take the food home with them on their flights. So it would go out on a table, or they would pop by the tent and say, could Ihor use this? Could he use that? I'm like, oh, rice pudding. Yes, that's a really awesome, one of my favorites. I said, I bet you he'd like that at this point in time. And that was a real hit too. I got 12 of those. I'm like, yes. So those were, yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing how much people were reaching out and helping out. I was really overwhelmed by that. And
that was all allowed. Like earlier you were saying only one crew is allowed, but whoever's there is allowed to help each other.
So let me add to that. So, because I knew what he needed, on day five is when the crew actually did come up to me and say, okay, let's put his chair under this big top tent. That's actually allowed because we're down to so many racers now. And, so they would help me with that. And they actually helped me crew Ihor the final hours, because I was actually at a point where my words are sounding redundant. I need some fresh voices, some fresh ideas. And it was amazing. A fella from Iceland helped out and a couple others. And yeah, it was really overwhelming seeing everyone work together to get Ihor out for another loop. I was so thankful. So thankful.
But does that just add to your deliriousness, Ihor? You're like, wait a second, who are you? Like, you don't even know where you're going on the trail, like, let alone hearing from these new people that are now your crew.
No, you know, it actually helped me. I remember everyone who lended a hand of help, supported, stayed there. And I felt, it felt like entire camp was cheering for me. At some point, I even felt sorry for Harvey because no one was cheering for him. Because literally everyone was like yelling out my name, and every, like I would come to the cabin and it's all Ihor, Ihor, and everyone. And it was just overwhelming, like with all that support of the community and everyone who helped Marina and myself. Like we were so loved, we're so appreciated, and I wish I could do something for them. You know, and I felt like I was so useless and so dead at the end. I couldn't even say thank you enough, you know, to those people. And that's the beautiful part about our ultra running community and backyard community. Like, you don't see that in many other sports, where we're here to challenge our own demons, to race against the time. We're not here to race against each other, you know, and we're all in it together to help each other. And that's what we've experienced there.
Oh my goodness, Ihor. So well said. And you just mentioned you experienced so much love and you wish you could share it with others. Well, you had a lot of people cheering for you, and I'm going to try something, Carolyn, that I've never done before on the podcast, but I'm going to play something, a voice message that was sent to me while watching the Backyard Ultra, observing you showing love to another runner. So let's see if this works.
So that last runner who just dropped to bring it down to 7, I was watching while I was drinking my morning coffee, and he was waiting on the trail, as I'm sure you saw some of, and he wanted to say goodbye to everybody before he walked in, and all the other runners just high-fived him or patted him as they ran by, and Ihor stopped and gave him a big embrace, and I thought that was just a really nice testament to the kind Canadian spirit that we all hope to embody, that he stopped his run to embrace somebody who had been with him on the trail for that long, and none of the other ones actually stopped.
Who is that?
That was Heidi, Heidi Schmaltz.
Oh, that was Heidi. And oh my God. Heidi. So
yes.
Sweet.
So I saw that. I saw that moment, and I didn't know what I was seeing at the moment until she kind of clarified. I'm like, oh my goodness, you're right. Like, Ihor's the only one that stopped. And so I want to ask you what those final few hours were like. You know, what were the emotions? What was the kind of energy out there in those last few hours when there was only 5, 4, 3 of you left on course?
There wasn't much energy there. You could see that on videos that I didn't even look alive. And now I'm even watching, I'm like, oh my gosh, how bad I look. Where's my fat? It's gone. Like, my face looked like just skin and bones. And I'm like, and I look so bad. Like, I can't believe I was so bad in the cameras. But yeah, I think, yeah, Marina would probably have a better recollection of last hours. They were all a blur. It was all about complaining to Marina how bad I feel, how my foot is about to fall off. And Marina would say, no, you're going to do another hour. And I remember I would ask Marina, how many more do I need to do? How many more? And she was like, let's do one more. And then we will revisit. I'm like, no, Marina, can I just do one more and that's it? Like, well, let's see. Like, just do one more and we'll revisit. And I'll do one more. And she was like, I think you can do one more. I'm like, oh, Marina, you're killing me. Can you just give me a finite number where I can do this number and I'm done?
But it comes out, this wasn't you. This was Marina.
No,
okay.
Negotiating. No, until last 10, at least 10 hours, it was all her. It was her kicking me out and pushing me to a completely new to me dimension that I've never been before. It was like a pain cave in the pain cave where she kept shoving me in, you know, without me wanting to go into it. But I kept going because I felt bad letting Marina down, you know. Like, Marina would say, I didn't come here to lose. I didn't come here all the way to, and I was like, oh my gosh, Marina, you're so right. Let's do one more hour. Even though I feel like my foot is broken, I'll do one more hour for you.
Okay. So I've heard other people talk about winning back. In fact, I've heard, I don't remember his name, but somebody who won one a year or two ago, about how really it was the last two. It was the assist and the winner who really connected on course. And it was almost a grieving process when one person finally dropped, right? Because they needed to get there together. I'm hearing from you that your connection was really deep with your crew. And that was a large driving force for you. Was there any connection with Harvey out there? Were you guys at all pushing and pulling off each other? Or were you kind of separate from him?
I mean, I didn't feel like we were competitors per se, but we were not necessarily like super close. I felt like I had a deeper connection, say, with Bartosz from Poland, and then we spent a lot of hours with him. But with Harvey, we really had friendly and warm relationship. I didn't feel like we were competing, and in fact, I was like so delirious that at some point I thought Harvey and myself were in the same team and we already won. And I actually might have thought like, why are we racing against each other if we already won?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was so out of it, but then I was reminded that this is the last man standing. You got to keep going. And I mean, on the trail, at some point, we were trying to, like, Harvey would try to kind of speed up and show how strong he is. And I was like, okay, Harvey, I'm going to pass you here because you think you look too good. Okay, I'll show you I look a little good too. And we had a little of that going on, but nothing tense, nothing malicious. There is no, like, rivalry per se. Like, I really have huge respect for Harvey. And what he did is incredible because I saw him suffer a lot every single day. Like sometimes I thought like, oh my gosh, Harvey looks like he's just about to finish, to be done. And he would come back, rally back. So he's incredible. And when like I have to tell that like he deserved that win big time, you know. And when I saw him go from the last round, he looked super strong. And like many people thought that he was trying to pull some tricks on me, and maybe he did, you know, maybe he was trying to pull some tricks, but I was so out of it that I didn't even see those tricks.
And I would remind you.
Yeah. And Marina would remind me, you do your pace, you do your own thing.
Your thing. So the reality though, is you only did roughly four laps together solo. Like it wasn't like you were out there for 20 hours battling just the two of you. There were other people on course up until almost the very end. So when did you know it was the last one? When did Marina decide to let you be the last one? When did you know?
Well, see, I had to make that decision outside of the camp where Marina could not reach me. That was the only way to stop. Otherwise, I would never stop. So because she put me in that hour 108, she put some music in my ears, even though I could not listen to any music.
It was the night loop.
Yeah, it was first night loop, and she changed my shirt, and she said, okay, one more loop, and we're going to change your shoes. But as I was running that loop, Like I clearly remember this drone above my head following me, and at every step that I would make, like my foot was hurting so bad, like that I literally could not feel it anymore. Like, and so I came to the turn, and I sat down. I just wanted to take off shoe and just touch my foot and like just feel it a bit, and I started touching my foot, and I couldn't feel it. Like it was so like crazy and scary for a second. And that's the moment when I was like, okay, it looks so bad that I might be disabled here. Like, I don't want to ruin my future. I still have so many cool races to go to, cool places to see, cool people to meet, that I don't want to end it. I just want to draw the line here for the backyard and, get all this experience, go get all this knowledge, and come back with it in a couple of years with Marina, mm-hmm. of course, and attempt it with more knowledge, more experience, with more endurance, hopefully, in 2 years. You know, endurance comes with age. I still believe in it. So, you know, look at Harvey. He is 47, and he just...
Yeah,
he's killing
it. We did listen to a few nuggets of advice we gave you 2 years ago of, you know, maintaining your longevity. There you go.
See, I had to listen to Kim, you know.
But I won't take responsibility for you not to, no. tell us, you basically just didn't complete that last 107.
Yeah, yard. I said, I think this is enough. Yeah, I turned around. And as I was walking back, I think I did end up running like a kilometer or something. Like, oh my gosh, why did I run so far? But I just want to make sure Marina cannot reach me. So,
but you know what? You know what? When he lined up for that first night loop in his new little outfit, he had the music going on in his ears. The way he stood there with his hands behind his back, his hands together, that was a different pose for me. I was like,
that's a military submission posture.
This is not going to be good. I could. I didn't say a word. And then he went out and he took off. And then shortly in, my phone got several messages, and I opened up one and I saw one line, and I closed my phone immediately. I put it away. I'm like, I will deal with this on my own. I know everybody's watching right now. I don't want to hear it. I just need to see this for myself. So I walked down the road with two friends who I had met, who were helping me crew, and we stood there and waited for him to come back in. And yeah, it was over. And it was okay. It was okay that it was over. He had gone long and far and well beyond the world record. And I was really proud. I was proud of him. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. And I was walking back. Like it was all coming back to me. It was getting less and less delirious, to be honest. I don't know. Maybe that pressure was off. It was all coming back to me. I knew it was hour 108. I knew that I ran 107 hours. I knew that we broke the world record. And that's why, as I walked back, I was able to say something coherent, I guess, and wasn't completely out.
Oh, you were very coherent.
Oh, thank you. And at that point, I felt like, you know, I was able to say something and acknowledge Marina and everyone who helped me on this journey throughout 107 hours. And I was like, oh my gosh, we went so far. We went so incredible. Okay. And to be honest, even though I did not win, I lost. I DNF'd, my first DNF. But I did not feel like I failed. You know, I felt like I won it, to be honest. You know, even though I was second last man standing, but in my head, and it felt like we won it, you know. And everywhere we go after, like here in Canada, and all the messages that we received from people, not only from Canada, from all over the world, they all are saying it as if I won, you know, and it's just so incredible, you know. And
I think Laz would agree with you in his words. And, you know, this has been shared multiple times on social media and screenshotted YouTube videos. It's a DNF, but it's a hell of a good DNF. There has been no better DNF in the history of backyard. To hear that coming out of Laz's mouth has got to be an honor.
Yeah.
And just before that, you mentioned, you know, you regained your coherence and you did acknowledge Marina. You said, the first thing I want to say is thank you to this person. I want to thank you to this lady. And you pointed at Marina and you said, who really did everything for me. And for that to be the first thing you say when you walk off that course just really speaks to the class act that you are, Ihor, and to the teamwork that you both exhibited Thanks. Out there. And
that was just from
congratulations to you both.
Thank you. Yeah, I know for sure that I would never be able to do anything even remotely that close without Marina. Like, who would sacrifice that much of lifetime, you know, leave everything behind, go to the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, Bell Buckle, to make me run in loops with no sleep and feeding me and sacrificing her health, you know, her sleep, everything. Like, no, I am so grateful for Marina. You know, it's her win as much as it's her DNF as much as mine. Like, it's her win as much as
they're the wins. They're the DNFs. But no, that's coming through very loud and clear that you would not have made it as far as you did without Marina's help. My question for you, Marina, is, was there ever a point in you, like, it sounds like at least those last 10 hours, it was like he would have quit at each end of each loop if it weren't for you. Was there anything in you that felt conflicted about go on when he was saying like, my foot, like, was that motherly instinct to like nurture and take care of people? Was that ever activated a little bit of like, am I doing the right thing? Or
Good question, actually, because that actually did happen in the final, I want to say the final 7-8 hours where he did come back in and I had to like, you know, kind of deliberate with him in a roundabout way and work through it and take the right approach. I didn't want to say the wrong thing. So it was taking that silent, quiet approach and say, you can do this, though. You're so strong. And I'd whisper in his ear because I didn't want the media to hear everything I was saying. And it was just interesting how I had to use the right words to get him to get back out there. And he always remained calm. He always ate and drank whatever I put out. He was not fussy, which was really awesome. I did hesitate towards the end going, am I doing the right thing? Am I pushing too hard? Am I pushing too hard? But yet he would go out for another loop. So I'm like, yes, mm-hmm. He's doing one more. And so in my head, I did question myself like, oh, am I doing the right thing? Am I crewing the right way? And then when others did jump in to help out, I was very, very thankful because it was fresh faces, fresh voices, fresh ideas even. Just the littlest things made a big difference. Mm-hmm. And just letting him sit in the chair those final minutes before that final whistle helped in the final hours, just letting mm-hmm. him sit, just letting him relax, close those eyes. Even if he wasn't sleeping, it was just resting. And it was just all do what you got to do just to get him.
Yeah. Well, you're in uncharted territory. Like, how are you supposed to know? There's no manual for what I do here.
But it kind of came naturally. It was just a natural thing. Interesting. Like, I don't look at myself and go, oh, wow, like I did it freaking amazing. Like, I don't look at it that way. I just feel like I did what I had to do.
Yeah.
To get through it.
Yeah. It's probably very intuitive in that moment, like what the right thing is to do. But Ihor, how is your foot? how did your recovery go? Like, what's going on with, was it all in your head or like, what, is there something really going on with your foot?
I did not break it. Not that I think I did. I mean, I still feel it a little bit. There is a bit of kind of soreness there, but I can walk and I can run, but I'm just forcing myself not to for at least 2 weeks after the race. And it's not bad. It's good. I still feel it there. So I think now that I think I made the right call by, you know, by drawing a line there, by stopping there. So yeah.
I know you had an injury going in your ankle. Is it the same side? Or I wouldn't say going in. Previous to backyard, you had an injury. Is it the same side?
Yeah. I was actually telling Marina that it's very funny because I was very nervous because I had a little niggle there going into the race. And the night before, I told Marina, like, okay, I can feel it there. And I feel like I might drop out very soon. So I had a really bad night of sleep before the race because I was so stressed about that ankle. And now as we started running, I mean, I still felt it a little bit, but the funny thing is that at the end, literally everything was hurting except that ankle. like that ankle was totally not an issue. You know, it was totally gone because I had pains everywhere else in my body, like literally everywhere else.
Well, on camera, right as soon as you finished, you told the world that you were coming back next year. So my question to you is now, a few weeks later, or almost a week, you know, 2 weeks later, do you still feel the same way? Are you going to go back and try to better your record?
Well, I'm not coming next year because it's every 2 years.
All right, right? Every 2 years, next time. Year.
But I am coming in 2 years back, given I'm in good health and Marina wants to come too.
Okay.
She's still in love with backyard crewing, hopefully, by then. You know, every night that I would run, I would tell myself, this is my last backyard. I will never, ever do this thing again. This is the worst thing in the world.
You did say that a few times.
Right? Three nights. Starting from night one, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee, running these loops. There's no views. There's nothing. It's such a horrible format. This is the last time I'm doing it. I'll never do it again. But when I was walking back while doing my walk of shame on loop 108 back in my head, I'm like, I want to do it again. You know, I want to come back in 2 years with all this experience and knowledge and hopefully do better.
And what's underneath that? Why? Like, why do you want to come back? Is it, do you think you can do it better? Do you have something to prove? Like,
I think, yeah, I'm still that curious boy. And I think we can keep going. And I think we humans can go through the fifth night and we can do at least 120 hours. And, you know, the sun is up then, and who knows, why would we stop when the sun is out? Right. I feel we can do incredibly hard things, and we did do them at Biggs, but I think 108 hours is not our limit. I think we can push it way, way further with a good training, preparation, mindset, with this new knowledge, experience, and with amazing crewing.
It wasn't a year ago, maybe definitely not 2 years ago, that people were all wondering if we could crack the 100 hour mark, right? Like, could the human body even go 100?
Yeah.
And now it's been blown away in a very short time. And you're throwing out numbers like 120. And I have no doubt you're right. Like, really, what's the limit? You know, every time somebody goes further, it's evidence that it's possible, right? And very exciting to see what might come up for you in the future. So besides returning to backyard in 2 years, or, you know, the world champions in 2 years, what's next on the list for you? Are you headed down to Patagonia in December?
I am, yeah, in a few weeks. I guess I'm leaving 27th of November. Hopefully I can, I should be okay by then. I should be able to run. But that is going to be just in like an adventure, more to see beautiful Patagonia rather than the race. But race-wise, is the next competitive race would be Hurt 100 in January. And in fact, Marina is coming too. She's pacing Eric Bird.
Okay.
So we're both going to be there. And I lucked out with a lottery. I won the lottery. So, this is the next, big race that we're both going to.
It's not
we're
easy.
Excited about it. But it's not backyard, so...
No, yeah. 20-mile loops, right? Very technical trail. Well, that'll be exciting for sure. Anything you do, Ihor, you seem to do like to 150% of what's possible. And it's just really great to catch up with you. It's great to meet you, Marina, and hear your side of the story. And thank you. Thank you for going with Ihor and supporting him in what he's done. Yeah. And thank you both for just being great ambassadors for Canadian running. And good luck with everything that's coming up for you in the next season.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim and Carolyn, for having us. Yeah, it's always an honor to be on your podcast.